one is the general presentation of material costs according to Aristotle. The second one, which will be very short, is passage to living bodies. But I will just stop 5 minutes on living body, and after to go directly to material cause in the politics. I think this would help to solve a riddle in the politics. That's the riddle about the parts of the polis, which are distinguished in different ways in different books of the politics. So we need understand why. The general assumption is just that Aristotle changes his mind from a book to another, but that's somehow an old-fashioned approach, evolutionary, and I think we could try to give a more systematic reason for the changing of approach. So, let's start from a general definition of material cause. You find in the end out point one is a text which is both in metaphysics and in physics, 2-3. Cause signifies in a meaning that from which a thing derives as something immanent. For instance, the bronze is that from which of the statue and the silver of the saucer and so on. The definition is very short, and much of it is are examples. So the two elements which are present in the definition are from which, exu, and immanent, enuparchontos. Now I would like to examine those two characteristics, what means exu and what means enuparchontos. Exu expresses the dependency relationship from matter with the proposition ex plus genitive, and is a normal Greek, indicates that from something from which something derives. In the physics, in book one of the physics, it is said that the proper use of ex plus genitive indicates privazione, privation. But it is possible to use ex plus genitive also to indicate the substrat from which something derives. And is the second passage, but we sometimes use the latter form expression, ex plus genitive, even of what survives. We speak of a statue coming from bronze, and not of the bronze coming of a statue. The difference between privation and matter is that privation disappears when the form appears, but matter does not, and continues to stay. Another interesting passage is number 3. Continues, Aristotle speaks again on ec plus genitive, and he says that dikos gar todek tude, for this thing come from that thing in two senses, either meaning that it will be found at another stage, or meaning that is analyzed into its principles. For my purpose is the first phrase, the first possibility, which is important. It's a difficult phrase, pro odu estai. One possible interpretation is to see two stages of material causality, one proximate and one far away, more remote. Pro odu means something which is away in a way, in an odos. So there are two kind of material causes, one which is far and one which is proximate. You can see this in the fourth passage. It is the proximate cause we must state. What is the matter? Not fire or hurt, but the matter peculiar to the thing. So we have a different level of something ex who, from which a thing derives. One which is remote and the other which is proximate. Let's stop for the moment examining ex who, and let's pass to enuparchontos. Enuparchontos is to be immanent in the mean, in the form of being under and staying under, is a substratum which passes from privation to the form, but it remains. Passage number 5, in every case there is something that underlies and from which derives what changes. For instance, animal and plants for seed. Among things which come to be absolutely, some come to be by change of shape, or the stature, and others in other way. What is described as enuparchontos in the first passage is described as hypokeimenon in the fifth passage. So, which something which lies under, it doesn't disappear. This is the main distinction between the moving cause and the material cause, because in the case of moving cause, the moving cause can disappear, but the result remains. For instance, when Peleus dies, Achilles still lives, but the material cause of Achilles, the flesh and organs, as we will see, stays for the entire time in which the result stays. So we have a contemporaneity of the cause and effect, and what enuparchontos means. So the moving cause can just give the kick and the thing goes on living. In the Partibus Animalium, Aristotle says, like some automatic toys, when launched, they continue to move. But matter does not work in this way. So we have a dependency relationship that is from something, something which remains all the time of the effect. What remains, however, is not everything, but is something which has the dynamis, the potentiality of being the thing that derives. And that's a point which I would like to stress very much. In the passage 6, which is very known, from Zeta 6, Aristotle speaks about potentiality with reference to matter. In the second line, we say that potentially, for instance, a statue of Hermes is in the wood, and he says that the actuality, is the last line, is some actualities are as movement to potency, and the other as substance to some sort of matter. There is a huge discussion about this passage. I don't want to enter in it. I just want to underline the phrase Tina Ulen. Not every matter is a matter of everything, but each thing has some matter, some specific matter. Tina Ule, not matter in general. This is an argument against the idea of prima matter, which underlies everything. This matter has the potentiality to become the thing. So we can distinguish different levels of matter. I can just draw here a simple example. We have three layers of matter: the elements, the mixed bodies, and in the living thing, the organa, like heart, lungs, hands, and so on. All those levels are called matter. Even the organa, face and hands, are matter for the living body. And each level is an instrument for the generation of the upper level. So the lower level has to be the potentiality to become the upper level. I have no time to stop in the passages on the Meteorologica, but in the Meteorologica, in Degenerazione e Corruzione, Aristotle adds that the potentiality is much more clear at the upper level and less clear in the lower level, because to be an organ is more clear in the case of a hand than in the case of fire or water. Okay, the potentiality of being an organ for something, so of being the proximate matter of an existing things, as I said before, is not open to any matter, but in passage number 8, Aristotle says that each things need, in order to do its job, its energia, its functioning, a different matter. When the matter is one, there is the possibility to produce different things owing to difference in the moving cause. For instance, from wood may be made both a chest and a bed. But for different things, there must be necessarily a different matter. For instance, a saw could not be made of wood, nor is this in the power of the moving cause, for it could not make a saw of wool or of wood. So there is a range of possibility for the moving cause, an infinitely open range of possibility. The moving cause, if the result is a saw, cannot use, for instance, wool, but must use something which is strong, hard. Those differences in the matter are called, in the Meteorologica, the passive qualities, as tension, tractly, hardness, softness, and the rest of them. And the techne is the knowledge of the possibility of matter to become something or something else. Now, I will skip some passage about necessity. I will just say that the necessity, it's a fronte necessity, in the meaning that if we have a saw, necessarily we need iron, but not necessarily if we have iron, we will have a saw. Depends on in a lot of causes, different occasions and constitution. In the passage number 10, you will see that the three levels I distinguished for the non-animate beings apply also to the living beings. Is the partibus animalium. Now there are 3 degrees of composition, and these are the first in order, as we all will allow, is composition on what some call the elements, such as earth, water, fire, and so on. For fluid and solid, hot and cold, for the material of all composite bodies. Second degree of composition is that by which the homogeneous part of animal, such as bone, flesh, and the like, are constituted out of the primary substances. The third and last stage is the composition which form the heterogeneous part, such as face, hand, and the rest. And we have the 3 levels I indicated before. The relationship also in the living beings, the relationship between those levels is instrumental in a sense and of potentiality in the other. For instance, blood is the matter of everything in the body, because blood can become every kind of every part of the body. And also in living beings there is the hypothetical necessity, affronted necessity, that I described before. So just to sum up what I've said before passing to the polis. The matter is something from which a thing derives and that remains. To remain is to be contemporary to the effect. Not every matter can subsume every form, but there is a selection principle for matters and for form. There are different levels of matter and material cause, and the upper level are more understandable than the lower level on their constitution, and the necessity is affronte and hypothetical. So the problem is, can we apply all this machinery to the polis? If we were speaking about Plato, it would be easier to answer yes, because in the Republic Plato says that the polis is a man in big, and to understand the soul of a man we should look at the polis. So there is the possibility to see the polis as a man writ in large. And there are some scholars in Germany, Aristotelian scholars, like Manfred Riedel. They have maintained that this is possible also in Aristotle. The argument is, since the polis is more autarches than a single man, so the polis is more substantial than a single man. But nobody believes it. The attempt of by Riedel has not been accepted, because it's very clear that for Aristotle, both in categories and in Book Zeta, the substance is primarily the individual thing, not the universal or the general thing. And also the polis is not a substance, it's a koinonia. And the koinonia is an insieme, how do you say, a set of individuals that are not on the same plan, but are organized by a taxis, a systematic organization, like for instance a chorus in the tragedy, or an army. So we can doubt if all this applies to the city, because the city is not really a substance, an individual substance. The city is strange because it's both natural and artificial. In a very strange passage I haven't put in the text, Aristotle says that there is in everyone by nature an impulse toward this sort of koinonia, i.e. the polis, and the one who first constituted is responsible for the greatest good. So it's natural to have a tendency toward the polis, but the polis has been invented by someone. And people wonder how the two things can be together. The polis has many differences, if we make a comparison with a living being, a man, the polis has many differences from a man. For instance, the three causes do not coincide, because the democratic constitution is not engendered by another democratic constitution, but by a legislator. And the matter, we will see, is something different from the matter of a body. But, nevertheless, there are some hints about the idea that Aristotle thinks to the polis as something similar in some way to a living being. The most important evidence is the strange theory according to which when a constitution changes, we have a complete change of polis. A polis dies when the constitution changes, and another polis is born. Like in a living being, when the form disappears and another form appears, there is another living being coming out. This is a very strange theory, according to which, for instance, there is not such thing as Italian history, because we had many states, and we had kingdom, and after we have a republic, first republic, second republic. So there is not Italian history or English history, but different sets of histories. Even if the polis is not a living being, all the same, I think, we can say that Aristotle won't apply the four causes model to the polis. Because in Book Lambda, he says that the four causes are to be applied by analogy to different kind of being, for instance, day and night, sounds, and so on. So, also for the polis, Aristotle uses the four causes, but in a hidden way, not explicitly. This is something to do, I think, with the kind of text that the politics is a text for the wide public, for legislators, another text for member of the schools. So he uses the language of physics, not much the language of metaphysics, but the language of physics, but often in a hidden way. You can see in the passage number 13, the explanation of money. In the first book he explains why money has been invented. The use of money was necessarily devised with a view to exchanges. They made a compact with one another to give and accept, something which was itself one of the useful things and could use flexibly to suit the need of life, such iron and silver and whatever else might be of this sort. At first, it was something determined simply by size and weight, but eventually they impressed the mark on it in order to be relieved of having to measure it. So it's easy to see the four causes in this passage, because with a view to exchange is the final cause. They made a compact is the moving cause, efficient cause. Something which was itself one of the useful things, such as iron and silver, is the material cause. And the mark impressed, which says 1 pound or 1 drachma, is the form. So Aristotle doesn't speak about his four causes theory, but it applies it in fact. Now, the point toward which I am going is the comparison between population and constitution in the polis, which, in my opinion, are in relationship similar to form and matter. The population is the matter of polis, the constitution is the form. This is hardly new. In every manual you can find this theory. And Aristotle himself says, is the passage number 14, that in one single passage he says that the population is the hyle of the polis. Just as in case of the other craftsmen, material should be available that is suitable to work on, for the extent that it has been better prepared. What is brought into being by art is necessarily finer. So in case of political expert and the legislator, the proper material should be available in suitable conditions. So the legislator must have a matter which is suitable for his aims. As somebody who wants to prepare a saw should not have wool, but should have iron. I will go very quick on one point. I think that we can find the same three levels of matter in the polis as in every else work of Aristotle, both physics and biologic. And the three levels of composition of matter of the polis are: first level, which is in book 1, inhabitants. He says that polis is made by people living in it, without any distinction. Free men, slaves, young, old, women, male, and so on. The second level is the oikos. And the oikos is represented in the public realm by the despotes. That is the citizen. The citizen form in the polis some social groups like farmers, merchants, peasants, rich men, poor men, the groups can be divided differently in the history, and somebody can belong to different groups at the same time. Somebody can be farmer and rich, or merchant and poor. But we have the groups, the social groups. Well, one can object that it is evident that social groups are composed by citizens, but it's not evident that one citizen, Callias, is composed by inhabitants. But there is wrong in a way, because in ancient political view, the citizen who is part of the assembly is not like the modern citizen who is by himself for the fact of being an Italian or an English or an American citizen is part of the city. In fact, the citizen is member of the city as representative of the entire oikos that he diriges. In a way, he represents in the public realm the oikos which is behind him. So, children, slaves, women, cattle, and property. So, to be a citizen is to be the head of a small social unity that is represented in the group, and people belongs to these groups, those groups, because of the oikos they live in. So a farmer has an oikos different from a merchant, and so he belongs to the group of farmers, and the sailor belongs to an oikos different from the oikos of a farmer, and so there is a composition and instrumental relationship between the three levels of inhabitants in the city, very similar to the relationship between earth, water, air, blood, bone, face, and brain and lungs. And this is everything. This is in the back of Aristotle's mind. It is not explicitly said, but if you see the thing in this way, you can understand why Aristotle in Politics sometimes says that the polis is composed by individuals. Sometimes says that the polis is composed by citizens only. Sometimes says the polis is composed by farmer, merchant, rich and poor, and so on. There are not different theories. There are different levels of the same theory. Okay. Two more points, very quick. The first point is that as the form of a soul requires some material, so every constitution requires a different citizenship. You see in passage number 19, 20, and 21, some passages in which Aristotle fundamentally says the same thing. The reason for there being a number of regimes is that there are a number of parts in any city. We might now say that there are several kinds of democracy and oligarchy, for there are several kinds, both of the people and the so-called notables. So, also the difference between not just democracy and oligarchy, but the subspecies of democracy and oligarchy depend on the population, the groups of the population, like so depends on iron. And much more clear is passage number 21. By nature, there is a certain people apt for mastery, another apt for kingship, and another that is political. So they will have different constitution. And Aristotle goes on, it is evident from this why most regimes are either democratic or oligarchic. For a result of the fact that the mingling element is often few in them, whichever is preeminent, whether those owning property or the people, overstep the middle and conducts the regime to suit itself, and there arrives a democracy and oligarchy. So, the legislator cannot, and this is against Plato, I think, the legislator cannot transform every city in a perfect city. In the fourth book of the Politics, there is a list of the best constitution, the second best, the constitution which are applicable to different cities, and is the same kind of hypothetical affront and necessity that we have in the discussion about matter and form. Population can be forced to assume a certain constitution. The legislator can make better the polis, but just as far as the composition of the polis allows. So we should not try to make a perfect city in every moment. If you think that we are in a period of foundation of colonies and new cities, where especially in Alexander the Great time many, many cities were founded in Syria, in Orient, and so on. So Aristotle, in the 7th and 8th book of the City, presents a very realistic model of a perfect city to be founded among barbarians, in which barbarians work the land and Greeks live a theoretikos bios. But this is not possible to do in the already existing cities. So there is a kind of necessity in history, of materialistic materialism. But it's not the necessity, the absolute necessity, according to which if we add 2 and 2 we have 4. Is the hypothetical necessity according to which if we have a democratic constitution the population must be not too poor, not too rich, and if we have an oligarchic constitution necessarily the population must be made of many rich and few poor, and so on. So we have a down-top necessity. As Aristotle says in the Physics, if we have a house, we must have foundations, but not necessarily if we have a foundation, we will have a house. Passage 22 says more or less the same thing. And the passage 23 is a confrontation with Karl Marx, which is something strange nowadays. In the 70s, when I was a young professor, was normal to speak about Marx, but now it is not usual. But I think it's illuminating for two reasons, one theoretical and one historical. If you read Karl Marx, he says, in the social production of our existence, men inevitably enter into definite relations which are independent of their will, namely relation of production. The totality of this relation of production constitutes the economic structure of a society. I skip one or two lines. Is this not the consciousness of men that determines their existence, but their social existence that determines their consciousness? So Marx understands this necessity as a tergo necessity. So if we have some kind of population, necessarily we will have such kind of regime. Aristotle, on contrary, has affront a necessity, and which says, if we won't have this kind of regime, necessarily we should have this kind of population. So Aristotle makes a much more open kind of necessity for the intervention of the single person in history. The problem of the single intervention in history has always been a problem for Marxism, because there is a kind of historical necessity. But if we understand necessity as hypothetical necessity, there may be the condition, but not the moving cause. And without the moving cause, we have not the desired result. Historically thinking, I think it can be proved that Marx is arrived to prepare to formulate his position by reading Aristotle's Politics. Many years ago I wrote something on this, and there are unpublished heft quaderni, notebooks by Marx here between 1857-1860, when he wrote, transcribed the passage from the Politics and elaborated this text, which is 1859, so exactly in the period when he was studying Aristotle. So the idea of necessity is derived in a way from Aristotelian necessity, but since Marx was an Hegelian in a way, he took this necessity to be much more necessary and strong than the Aristotelian hypothetical necessity. Last point, and I shut with this, matter for Aristotle is something which has some power of determination. It's not the materia jacet inerts res ad omnia parata, as Seneca describes it in the Epistula number 65. Matter is not stoic matter. It's a matter full of potentiality, which can determine the set of possibility open to the moving cause. In this way, is not the Platonic matter, the Hule, which has some movement in itself, but has something to say in the process. Whereas the matter described by Seneca, speaking about Stoicism, is completely passive. So we can understand better, looking at the polis, what is the material cause. The material cause is the proximate matter from something, which determines the set of possible results for the intervention of the moving cause, and refuses to accept every project. And this is that can be seen also in the living world. For instance, a mule and a horse can interbreed, but the result cannot breed another mule or a horse, or we have un mulo, un asino, I don't remember the name of the son of a horse and a mule. There is the possibility of intergeneration, but this intergeneration does not go farther than the first generation. And other beasts cannot interbreed at all. So I think we see better from this comparison not just the political necessity in Aristotle, but also what the material cause is. Okay.
Thank you.